the amusement park.
Yes.
Let's start off with a little bit of personal context for Mr. George Romero, the late, great George Romero. Are you a fan?
I am. I haven't seen Monkey Shines.
neither have I. Maybe we should fix that.
Well, there's a lot of 80s movies that I didn't know that he really directed. I didn't know he did The Dark Half. Mm-hmm. I knew of these movies, but I didn't know they weren't Romero movies to me, you know. Yeah. So outside of The Dead, I mean honestly, I've seen only actually this year was the first time I saw Day of the Dead. That was the third of the trilogy, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or well, if you're going to count Survival of the Dead and Land of the Dead, that's fine.
The third of it's kind of like Star Wars, you know. There's the original ones, and then there's just the ones that came after.
Mm-hmm. Right, yeah. Right, right. I liked most of, I guess maybe part of Day of the Dead. I kind of liked the different direction he was going and what he was doing with it, but yeah, it's hard to. It's inevitable, but it's hard to compare it to the first two. Because to me, like, Night of the Living Dead and Dawn of the Dead is kind of like Alien and Aliens.
Yeah.
You know, it's just kind of like one was incredibly groundbreaking for its genre, and then the second one just did something totally different and upped the ante, you know? And so I've always had a tremendous amount of respect for him. And, you know, especially, you know, the impact that he had on other filmmakers. So, yeah, I mean, I feel like there's even some in the mid to late 70s that I still got to catch up with that seemed really interesting when I was looking at his filmography recently. How about you?
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of in the same boat. You know, I was a big Night of the Living Dead fan from way back, and same with Dawn of the Dead. Day of the Dead, I think I saw in its entirety when I was an adult. It was kind of like you. It's one that I caught up with later. Mm-hmm. And while I appreciate it, it is just kind of a very different, weird movie. The characters are so over the top and out there, particularly in terms of the portrayal of the military folks who are all going insane, which I guess is, it serves the story, but just as an experience of watching it, like Joe Pilato's like outraged, like swearing all the time, like freak show guy. Wow.
He's like dialed up to 11. I'm like, dude, calm down. Jeez, what's going on here?
But he does have one of the great all-time cinematic deaths, you know, in history.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But much like you, there's a lot that I have not seen of George Romero. In fact, reminds me a lot of Toby Hooper. I'm reading a book on Toby Hooper by Scout DeFoya, and just looking through his filmography, I'm like, oh, wait, he directed that? And oh, my God, he was involved in all of these different TV show pilots.
Right.
So kind of like the Coen brothers and all these other great.
Joe Dante.
Dante. I love directors who you can name them and like, okay, what are their top like six films? And once you get past three, you're like, wait a second. Oh my God. Wow. They directed all of this. It's hard to peg them down.
Right.
So now we're going to talk about The Amusement Park, which is sort of a weird unearthed middle period movie from 1973 that was just released and restored. It's coming out on Shudder, which by the time people are watching this, it'll be out on Shudder, the streaming horror service. It is billed, I'm going to go out on a limb and say incorrectly on IMDb, in the genre of drama, horror, thriller.
Yeah.
I don't quite know what to make of this. And, you know, I'm going to quote Pet Sematary here. Sometimes dead is better.
Expand on that. I mean, I know we're not getting into a whole lot of spoilers right away, but what do you mean?
I mean, I was very excited for this because you know, we got the press email like, hey, check this out. It's a lost George Romero film called The Amusement Park. And it's this metaphor about aging, and Romero is great with his metaphors a lot. I expected something, and it's got a wonderful poster too.
It's awesome.
Yeah. It's one of those things where I can just imagine it'd be great if Shudder or whoever put out like a limited edition folded poster, like something yeah. dug out of a crate in the 80s.
Like Shout Factory or something. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, beautiful artwork. Mm-hmm. But yeah, the experience of watching it was just a sinking feeling from almost minute two that didn't let up until after it was over. I was so profoundly disappointed that I had to go to, well, the filmmaking itself was pretty good in mm-hmm. parts, mm-hmm. But this is more of a curiosity. And I think people going in expecting, yeah. you know, from the creator of Night of the Living Dead, this is some kind of a weird, I think, misguided, and I'm going to use the word dishonest very lightly, but it's a disappointment.
I could see that. I felt it was, I didn't think much of it, but I kind of liked that. I felt it like it was kind of like a student film from a film professor. you know, it was very, I didn't read that description. I read a description that said it was like a PSA on elder abuse and ageism. Which was really very interesting. And I think I'm kind of shocked that there's not more written about how Romero got attached to this project and what filming was like. I mean, gosh, there would be, it'd be great to see some kind of a making of or a documentary about this, because it's just kind of crazy that this thing even happened, you know, because I think I was reading a little bit. What I could find is that some Lutheran society approached Romero. Now just imagine that. It's like, you know what kind of movies he makes. So some Lutheran society hired Romero to create a movie about elder abuse. And this was the result. And then once he presented that to the society, to them, they were like, you know, shocked and horrified, and, you know, they never wanted it to be shown anywhere. Which was funny because, all right, you know, the movie revolves around an old man. Well, I mean, is 71 old? You know, Indiana yes. Jones is going to be 80 next summer. Anyway.
Yes, and that's further proof he does not belong in. I'm sorry, sidebar, I love Harrison Ford, but when I saw him at the Oscars, I'm like, man, it's time to get off the camera.
I can't wait till next summer. But anyway.
It's going to be the sad. Yep. Mark my words, it's going to be the saddest. It's going to be a sadder experience than watching Amusement Park.
It will be sadder than the last Last Blood, the last Rambo.
That one was, it was
come
all
on,
right.
Come on, no.
It was
no.
all right.
Come on. Mm-hmm. All right.
I'm thinking in comparison to Harrison, it's wow. fine. It's okay to say it's over. You had your chance with Last Crusade. Just let it go.
Harrison is making all my young David dreams come true. You give me one more Solo, one more Deckard, one more Jones, and then he's going to die.
And you've seen how those have turned out, right?
Yeah. Just one more Rusty Savage or something. That would be great. That was a deep cut. So just again, the way I described that, can you imagine, like, what are the stories that surrounding that? You know, who are these? Who is this Lutheran society that thought Romero could make a decent PSA that focuses on ageism and elder abuse? Was ageism and elder abuse such a big thing in the early 70s? I mean, it's always existed, right?
And that's, you know, that's kind of my. There's a lot of mystery around this. I would almost rather see a documentary about the making of it, mm-hmm. and also, you know, say a year from now, what people are writing about it and its relevance today, because I couldn't help thinking that someone wanted to see this release today because it's an artifact, because it's mm-hmm. it's restored and it's cool, and people, you know, completists will want to see it.
Belongs in a museum.
There you go. But I wonder if there's people who think, but it's, you know, it's still relevant today. And I don't know if it was even kind of like what you're saying, if it was relevant even back in the 70s when it came out. Because as a PSA goes, and when you're telling me it's something that a church came up with to pitch to the flock or to other people to cause mm-hmm. awareness, that makes more sense than if it's simply an idea of like, and it wasn't written by Romero. It was written by Walton Cook, who, mm-hmm. from what I saw, this is his only credit. I don't know if he was with the church or what. no offense to Mr. Cook or the Cook estate, if he's not around.
Or the church.
Yes. Or if they did, yeah, if they did other great things. I'm just saying, right off the bat, this felt like a PSA to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if you had lopped off the first 3 minutes or 6 hours, however long that thing went. I mean, it's only a 52 minute film, but it went, the PSA intro went on forever. And then the last 2 minutes, I think you have a shot at something that is still kind of problematic, but at least it's less insulting, because they start off by saying, you know, it's like if Rod Serling came out and spoiled every episode of The Twilight Zone in those little intros, mm-hmm. and just saying, you know, before you have a man who's about to come to a crossroads. And then he just went on to say, and that crossroads is because he's trying to figure out if he should leave his wife or go for fame and fortune or whatever. No, this one is about an old man who goes to an amusement park that is essentially populated by regular, you know, amusement park goers and the elderly, but all of the rides and the attractions and the amusements have to do with the indignities that old people suffer.
Yeah.
And he's going to go through, it's kind of like a weird twisted, you know, the ideas are downright evil and everything.
Yeah. But
it's a plea for something. And at the very end, there's a call to action. And I was floored that the call to action was not what I had expected it to be.
Mm-hmm.
We can kind of get into that in a bit, because I don't want to jump too far sure. ahead, but it was ham-handed and clumsy. And, you know, again, the filmmaking was cool. I liked the shots of the mm-hmm. roller coasters. Some of the, you know, when he goes up on that roller coaster, some of the shots that he got, I can just imagine shooting this in the early 70s. I'm like, how is he getting up on these roller coasters and under these racks and everything, going up and down with these heavy ass cameras that he had to have been using? I mean, it's really impressive.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, if some of it was handheld or what, I mean, that would be crazy. The cinematography is by S. William Hensman, who died in 2012. But he also, so he's worked with Romero before. He played some small parts, some small acting parts in like The Crazies and Night of the Living Dead.
Wasn't William Hensman the wasn't he the graveyard zombie in the beginning of Night of the Living
Dead? It's just so interesting to see, you want me to make this movie that can maybe say something about society. I'll use my own crew. And it's just, I liked how it opened. I actually liked the kind of PSA intro where it was just the actor. It almost looked at first like he was walking through a zoo. I think it was just a park. I don't know if it was the West View Park where this was shot, but it looked like it could have been. But it was Lincoln Maisel, and I don't recall him in a whole lot else, but that doesn't mean he's been in tons of movies.
Or I like to call him the marvelous Mr. Maisel.
There you go. Actually, no, he hasn't been in a lot of movies. I lie. It's only been in 3 movies, or this was his main movie. So it's really interesting because he comes across as this kind of like, his demeanor is, you know, very kind of stoic and, you know, kind of like a perfect matter of fact narrator, host, announcer for PSAs. And, you know, he's sitting there, I'm 71 years old and, you know, I get overlooked and this and that. And he's going on and on and on. Yes. But I just like, part of me thought, okay, when are we going to get into the movie? When is this going to start? But I'm like, this is just so odd and weird. And where's this going? And even just like, I don't think, yes, it is. I don't know if it's a 4K restoration. I don't know if you recall that, but there is somewhat of a restoration here, but it still feels very faded and cracked. And I kind of love that.
They haven't polished the movie to with an inch of its life. It looks like, you know, you could have dug this out and spun it on a projector and was like, wow, this is really cool. One of the other things I didn't like about this intro is it's full of these weird little disclaimers, such as most of the elderly people in this movie, they're not professional actors. They're actually just, you know, people from like rest homes. Mm-hmm. And this experience out at this real amusement park was the first time they've been out to do enjoyable right. activities for years for some of them. And I was thinking, all right, this is meant to draw on my sympathies so that when I'm watching a bunch of terrible actors give hammy performances or gee, look at me, I'm in a movie reactions, when those reactions are not called for, I'm supposed to let it slide. I probably would have picked up on that while watching the movie, but it just got in my head. I'm like, you're not setting me up for a good experience here, just as a film goer.
When I read that, I kind of automatically thought of like One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest when McMurphy took them all out to the ball game, or the Dream Team, or what was the other one? Awakenings, when Robin Williams took them all out, you know, the patients all out to, you know, the public. Those disclaimers kind of prepped me a bit, but I think what was interesting mostly for me was the cinematography and how it was shot, because you get these weird angles a lot, and some of them were from like ankle view or, you know, looking up. Mm-hmm. Discernible reason, just for, you know, kind of eerie effect. And I think, you know, some of it was almost, you know, the camera is trying to give you an idea of how discombobulated things are getting as the movie unfolds for this old man. Basically he is kind of, you know, treated increasingly awfully, you know, throughout the movie by an assortment of people. Primarily throughout the movie, he's overlooked. You know, if he needs help, people are, you know, it's kind of the same way people kind of see through homeless people, you know, when they're begging and, you know, on this side of the street. You know, when he's, you know, needing help, or even when there's that weird scene where I think he sits down at some kind of like a little restaurant in the park, outdoor restaurant in the park, and he's seated there and he's getting served. But then right next to him is another kind of older guy who probably is in a different, like higher economic level, and he's being served a lot more nicely, and he's dressed better.
Yeah, chomping on a cigar, eating lobster.
And this is all silent, so there's no, you know, there's music going on, there's the sound of the park and everything, but there's no dialogue or anything happening.
Right.
And then the protagonist here, this old man, orders his food comes, and he looks around and he sees other people who are even less fortunate than he is, who are younger, but they don't have, you know, they're hungry, and he could tell they're hungry. So he kind of offers them his food, and they just go like nuts, like zombies, to his food, and they just grab all the stuff. And then he just like, you know,
and it's a weird kind of message, because it sort of gets to the heart of what rubs me the wrong way about this is, you know, this movie comes from a point of view that I feel like the people who wrote it, maybe Walton Cook, maybe at the behest of this church or whoever wanted to get this particular message out there, they treat the elderly almost like they're babies, that they have no agency and no responsibility for how they end up in these stations in life, and a weird window into how the world views them. Because mm-hmm. it's not just that they are overlooked. It feels like they think the world hates old people. I mean, there's at one point, the guy is just sitting on a bench, I think someone just starts wailing on him, and then no one is there to help him. Mm-hmm. You know, but I mean, I don't know if things have changed that much since the 70s, but I feel like if you're out in a public space and someone just starts beating up an old man, there's going to be some kind of kerfuffle. It's not going to be like,
maybe. I mean, nowadays it's just going to be filmed on a cell phone or a smartphone, and just, you know, who's right. going to step in and help? I don't know. You know.
Well, okay, but let's just go for that smartphone analogy. It's not like it's going to go viral and everyone's be like, yeah, screw that old guy. He deserved it. They're going to be like, no. We have to track down this monster. Who's the guy that, yeah. What outfit is he with? We have to stop this horrible ideology. So again, it's hard to place myself in the context of 1973 because I wasn't even alive then. But everything about this movie and what it's trying to say feels slightly out of step. Let's go for our, meal example. You've got the guy eating the lobster, chomping on the cigar. Yeah, he's painted as being uncaring to the wait staff. He's kind of ignoring them. They're, they're propping up his chair and tucking in his apron and all this other
stuff.
And
at one point, they even carry him to a different position.
Yeah, so he doesn't have to look at the old man. Yeah, he's a jerk. But is the message that rich people are all jerks? Is it the message that this one particular guy is, not very nice? When you look at our main character here, he's looking over at the people who are not as well off as he is. And most of them are, minority characters. And then they come over and they just start like stealing all of his food and they leave nothing for him. So I'm like, okay, so what is that trying to say about the caste system of society? If you just welcome them over to the table and they showed up this rich old man by saying, yeah, we might not have as much money, but we at least have our dignity and community, that would be an interesting message. But the idea seems to be that the lower you go down on the ladder, the closer you get to animalistic behavior. I don't think that's healthy for anyone.
No.
But there's another scene where there's a fortune teller and the old man goes into the fortune teller tent. He follows this young couple in there. They're probably in their, late teens, 20s, early 20s, right? And the fortune teller, in one of the few bits of real dialogue, she says, I'll show you your future, but you have to see the entire future all the way. And they're like, sure, whatever. It's going to be great. And it's a very kind of confusing sequence because there are a couple of different perspectives that were shown. I have to guess that and we're going to get into, further, we're already in a spoiler country here, folks, but, the perspective we get is this young couple turns into a destitute old couple living in a slum. The slum lord is being interviewed on television. And I guess the idea is we're supposed to think this guy is letting people live in squalor and he's a horrible monster. But if you actually listen to what he's saying to the news person, it makes a lot of sense if you're living in the real world. Like, he owns this building. The tenants pay him the rent that he, is able to charge. He can't really sell this building because it's run down, but he also doesn't have the funds to upkeep it. So he's kind of in this like really weird trap, but fine. He's a monster, I guess. Old couple, the lady is running down to the payphone to call the doctor, and the doctor is like in his office, I guess, but he's dressed in these like weird Vegas gypsy party clothes and he's like hanging out and it's like
so weird.
It's like he's in Warhol's factory and he doesn't care about the lady on the line. So we cut back to, after this really long sequence, we cut back to the tent and the young couple. Oh, this is where the attack came from. I forgot about this. The young couple storm out of the tent. The guy is just livid and he actually attacks the old man. He's the one
who just sees the old man. He's like, I'm going to hit you.
Right. Because like, you represent the elderly and I'm never going to grow old. My question is, what is the message here? If the idea is that this young couple, this is their destiny, they're going to end up old and poor because this movie wants you to believe that unless you're born with a silver spoon in your mouth, you're destined to become old and poor. Could they not change that future? Could they not, invest in themselves and build financial investments, community investments, family investments to keep them from being cut off from everybody and rotting away in a slum? This at the very end, the final part of the PSA, when Mr. Maisel says, and here's something that you can do to help. I'm thinking, open a bank account. Make sure that you
be
kind to people, have good relationships with your loved ones. Don't cut off your kids. It's like, no, go volunteer for this organization that likes to help the elderly. That's great. Fine. But if the idea is you want to prevent what's going on here, it's almost like a handout mentality rather than an empowering one to say, it doesn't have to be like this. if you're young and you're watching this, there are things that you, there are steps you can take now to make sure that you don't end up, you know, on the street. I understand life knocks everybody down, but everybody in this movie is either a victim or a heartless oppressor. And it's just a really weird language to speak.
Yeah, I think the writer and Romero aren't really out to make old people like people, you know, like just to remind people that like old people are people too. It's just more of like, these are just, you know, going from one terrible situation to the next. And the depiction of old people is really kind of, you know, one note, one dimensional. Yeah. That whole scene with the young people seeing their future. It's funny because the young guy had more of an issue with his future than the young woman did. You know, it's almost like, what, you know, we can make it work. And he's like, nah, I don't want any part of it. You know, it's like, eh.
Well, it's weird because in that situation, I don't know how much pain he was in. He looked like he was comatose or zonked out or something. She was the one who was freaking out and like running up and down the stairs and making all these desperate phone calls. You'd think she'd be the one who was all upset.
Yeah. I think he was at one point like bedridden as an old man.
Yeah. He was just like non-responsive.
Yeah. You'd think that it's weird the way they responded. And maybe that says a lot. I almost think that like, if this movie could have been cut in thirds, you would have, and expanded a little bit, you would have like maybe three good Twilight Zone episodes or something. I don't know where you would cut it in thirds, but I like how weird it is and how it doesn't really care to, you know, go out of its way to make relatable or like a message that we can put to good use. You know, I mean, that whole scene in the tent was probably, I would say, maybe the trippiest as far as like editing and visuals.
Yes.
It's like, what is going on here? I like this, but it's just so weird, you know. I could see how this Lutheran society is just like, what? Why did we do this? You know, it's like, and Romero's just like, we're going to do this, we're going to do that. I like the looseness of it all and how bizarre it is. But yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I feel like even in that scene, how could something be painted with such broad strokes be so like narrow-minded, you know? It's broad yet narrow-minded, you know? It's like, what is going on here?
That's a great way to put it. You know, one of my other, I guess, issues with this is as weird as it is, would not have been a concern if I was seeing this fresh in 1973. But it's just so obvious to me, the wraparound sequence with the white room.
Yeah.
You've got the old guy who's, you know, we meet him, he's all beaten up and staring off into space. And then the kind of like the spry version of himself walks into the white room in the white suit, looking like a pseudo Mark Twain. And he's like, you know, hey, what's going on? And the beaten up guy's like, don't go out there. There's nothing.
Don't you want to go outside?
Yeah. And I'm like, okay. So at the very end, the beaten up version is going to come back into this white room and he's going to encounter himself, the chipper old man. And we're going to finally have an understanding of what was so horrible. And that's exactly, you know, it's one of those bookends where it's like the last 2 minutes of the same opening 2 minutes. And that's fine. And I guess, like I said, especially for 1973, maybe that would have blown some minds. But for me, I'm just like, tweak it a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's no changing it because, you know, it's not like they touched it up or remade the story in any way, you know, there's no getting around that. I think part of, you know, and this could be, I could be wrong, but part of what your response is to that is that we've seen so much, you know, so many stories, seen and read so many stories that is kind of, you know, a bookend trope. I knew that was coming too. I respected what they were doing. I'm like, oh, you know, even in the opening of that white room, I'm like, I always wonder, you know, because obviously there's no CGI or stuff. It's not like you're having a young Robert Downey Jr. talk to an older Robert Downey Jr. or something. You know, it's obviously this actor is filmed all nice and tidy in his white pristine suit one way, and then he's filmed later on beaten up and bandaged and bloody, you know, on the other way, and they just kind of go back and forth. They're never like really necessarily in the same shot,
but he makes it work, and
he
and,
does, yeah.
And I gotta say, the one really impressed, I like the roller coaster stuff, but I was really impressed by the way they introduced the amusement park, because yeah. when he turns and walks out of that room, and I think I figured out how they did it, because I was watching, I was like, how are they pulling this off? They have the amusement park, and it's filmed very tight, where you've got the two sides of the white door, like the molding on either right. side of the frame, and then you see the door. I think it closes or opens. I think it closes, think it, when we leave it, or
yeah,
we see it kind of, I think it opens, hinge.
Oh yeah,
because
then the, once he's out, there's the door, it's just a door frame, and I think it's opened it out. I don't know, I could be wrong.
I remember I saw the sides of it first at mm-hmm. the amusement park, and I was thinking, oh, they just went to the amusement park, set the camera up on the ground, and then had like these planks of wood on either side, or like a door frame mm-hmm. on, you know, hinge. Like I imagine two guys like holding this on either side of the camera to make it look like they're exiting the white room. I was like, mm-hmm. that is the kind of, you know, you gotta make the special effect happen. Awesome mm-hmm. guerrilla filmmaking that I love about George Romero. So that's the stuff I was keyed into this movie. And it's sad because Romero is famous for, you know, people talking about the social significance of Night of the Living Dead, and him coming out, you know, years later and saying, I never meant it to be a commentary. I just thought Dwayne Jones was an awesome actor. I wasn't trying to say something about like race relations in America by having this uh-huh. hero black character.
I believe him.
Yeah. And I do too. He got more into deliberate social commentary with his later films. I think he was, you know, pretty much, I was going to say, yeah, like Dawn, and then even Day, not so much Land of the Dead. I think that was kind of ham-handed, and
maybe Survival. Yeah.
I will be generous in mentioning Land of the Dead. You just said the S word. I think there was one after that anyway, with like zombies riding horseback on a beach or some nonsense.
But I think that was Survival, wasn't it? I could be wrong.
Oh yes, it was, because there was Diary of the Dead. That was the found footage one in between.
Oh wow. Yeah. Was that Romero?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah. So, but my point is, I can watch a Romero movie and be in love with the craftsmanship and usually the metaphor, the message, because it's not like that in your face, you know, in the earlier part of his career. With this, and the fact that it was made as sort of a PSA, I'm like, oh, so this is obviousness for obviousness sake, because you're trying to reach people, you got to drill in the message. It's just a bit too pedestrian. I hate saying that about George Romero or anything he's involved in. You're back now. You froze for a second. I'm sure I froze too.
I could hear you bouncing like,
that's okay. Yeah. You didn't anyway. Miss anything.
I didn't miss any amusement. it was also fun to see, you know, some of the old rides from, you know, back in the day, and I get a kick out of like seeing, like even watching old, you know, movies from the 70s and stuff, and maybe the 60s too, but just seeing how things used to be, from like signage to, you know, fashion, strollers, whatever, you know, it's just like, oh gosh, you know, it takes me back to like some of the photos that, you know, I had of, you know, when I was really young and my parents were taking me to Disneyland or Kiddyland or whatever.
Yeah. It really is cool, because you see people spending millions of dollars now to recreate the time period, seeing an actual mm-hmm. artifact from that time period. I'm thinking of like the clothes that the old ladies wore, with those kind of like the bug mm-hmm. eyeglasses and the big kind of dresses and stuff. It's a wonderful little artifact. I'm on the fence about recommending this. I mean, it's 50 minutes. You're in and you're out. And I think for Romero completists, they're definitely going to eat this up. But
yeah, you gotta if
you're,
see it.
But if you're like, it's on Shudder, it's like the horror channel, it's George Romero. I'm like, no, there's nothing scary about it. It touches on the weird, but there's nothing. You could watch this at 2:30 in the morning with all the lights out and you'd probably maybe even fall asleep.
I mean, it's like an after school special in a way. There's the only reason it's on Shudder is because Romero directed it and because he's known for horror films. That's it. It's not. I mean, are there some horrific things that happen to the poor old guy? Sure. You know, it's unfortunate. I would have liked to seen a bit more build up to the point where he's, I felt bad because I kind of chuckled when he's crying on the grass after the little girl and her parent, her sister and mom leave. Yeah. I'm like, this is not well earned. Cause he's just like, he totally unloads the tears. I mean, I get it. It's been a bad day and he's tired and beaten. And that's after this trio of like biker dudes kind of beat him up, which is kind of ridiculous.
And see the Grim Reaper shows up a number of times.
Wasn't the Grim Reaper first like on that train, right? And the train ride that they took?
I don't remember.
It was some weird faced guy that was randomly. It's like, what?
Yeah, and I thought I saw him on the roller coaster, but then I also thought he had like a different mask on. So I'm like, maybe it's just a carny or something. But you know, going back to that scene where the guy breaks down because you know the little girl leaves him.
He was reading a story to her, right?
Right. Yeah. I think the scene preceding that was really well done.
Yeah,
because when he's sitting there reading this, you know, bedtime story essentially to this little girl in the park, it was really sweet. And you know, she had that kind of like, she was sort of looking at the camera or like looking like wide-eyed at the story, like you could tell she was being directed, like, look like you're really interested in what this guy is saying. She's like but it was such a sweet little moment that's completely undercut by these, you know, you damn dirty ape theatrics kind of thing.
Right. Oh gosh, can you imagine if Charlton Heston was in this? Was the old man in this? That would have been awesome.
It would have been.
Get your hands off me, you clown. I did like leading up to that scene. It was she was like the only human who actually gave the poor guy a chance and recognized him. I would have been like, if I was after what he had gone through, I'd been like, nope, I'm not falling for this. Nope, I don't care if you're a cute little girl in a dress reading a book. I'm out of here. But yeah, it was such at that point, he was such a sad sack. I felt so bad for him, but it was just, I couldn't help but laugh because there was really no buildup. I think there could have been some great shots of him just really breaking down. You know, and I don't think there was enough of it. He went from like 0 to 60 in that scene to get there. It just adds to the weirdness, that whole thing, because it could have been a creepy girl too, you know, like at first really sweet and innocent. And you're like, all right, she's going to turn on him. Something's going to happen.
Well, I think, and I was just thinking this before you said it, in a kind of a different context, like if this movie had just, you know, get the PSA nonsense out of the way. If this had been more akin to Something Wicked This Way Comes, where you've got just an old man going to a carnival and he goes to some games and then gradually things start to get weird and metaphorical. But this is all just like all the signs outside the tents are, you can't enter unless you make $3,500 a year or something like that. I'm like,
again, that's very heavy handed. Like you can't, it's almost like, what is that trying to say? Like you can't enter a country club. You can't enter a tennis club, or what is it saying? You know, how do you relate that to 1973 society? I don't know. I almost felt like if you're going to go there, just make it a totally different universe, you know, like some kind of like weird, you know, extra dimension, you know, that this is just, you know, a different society, that what it could be if we continue to treat people this way, not just elderly, but people. This is what society could wind up being like. It would have been interesting even if in the end of the intro, say, we're going to now take a glimpse of what society could be like if we continue to treat each other this way. You know, that would have been interesting, I guess, you know, because at least then there's some context of like, okay, that's why this is so weird. That's why this is just so oddball.
It was a clever premise, but again, the execution was kind of flawed. He goes into the bumper cars, or he's in the bumper cars, but that's supposed to replicate traffic, and he witnesses a fender bender, and there's this younger guy who George Romero is in the movie. He's in the end credits.
I couldn't figure out where.
Well, that's the thing is, I thought, and you know, it's weird because in pictures you see of him from like this, you know, late '70s and early '80s, I guess he's more of a heavy set guy with a big beard.
Wow.
In this, movie, I could have sworn he was like the skinny, quote-unquote younger guy who got rear-ended and was yelling at the old people because it sounded like his voice.
Okay.
But so the idea is it's an elderly couple. They rear-end this guy in the bumper car, and then the cops come and the insurance man comes, and it's this whole thing. I'm like, you know, our main character witnesses all of this, but the cop comes up to take a statement or whatever, and he's like looking at his license, like, where are you? It says you're supposed to be wearing your glasses, and he's like, oh, I forgot to put them on. And then the old couple, you know, I think the lady rear-ended the guy because she wasn't paying attention or something. Mm-hmm. Like, what's the messaging here? Yeah, these people should not be driving, or if they are driving, they should be wearing their glasses, right, and all this stuff.
You're because too they're old dangerous. To be driving. Yeah,
right. Yeah, it's all of this stuff. I'm like, yes, it's kind of mean, but it's also kind of true because they're a danger to themselves. Sure. And others.
Yeah, to an extent. I mean, I don't think it necessarily was an accurate depiction of these elderly people, but, you know, like they didn't really seem like a danger. I would have liked it if it was just like, if the old man, he does kind of intervene and say, hey, I was a witness to this, if you want my statement, you know, and then they talk about like, well, it says here that, you know, let me see your license. Oh, it says here you wear glasses. Where's your glasses? Oh, yeah, you got a blind witness. Oh, that's really good. You'll see how that holds up. But it would have been great to just have this kind of meta moment with the old man and say, why are we even here? This is bumper cars. You know, it's like, you don't have to be that literal. You know, it would have been interesting to say it would have been interesting to say, like, he is like taken aback at how he thinks this is just an amusement park. Mm. And it would have been interesting to just kind of make a comment about how every place he goes to the amusement park is some kind of depiction of what's happening outside the amusement park, you know, like the whole traffic thing or whatever. You know, it could have been interesting because he would have just been like, I don't understand this. This is just an amusement park. I'm just here to enjoy, you know, some entertainment. You know, what are you people doing? You know?
Yeah, he's completely, you're right. He's completely under the spell of this place, and he has no real self-awareness of, you know, I wonder if it's almost like a meta metaphor about senility. I don't know.
But, could be.
Yeah. So I feel bad because I know this is of the current tomato meter. This has a lot of, it's like a 91% or like people really love this thing.
Well, your buddy, Scout Tafoa, gave it 4 stars in Ebert.
We don't have to talk about that.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm definitely interested in reading it. Cause you know, it's really interesting when you watch a movie that you think like, and then you see so many raves about it. It's like it definitely makes you want to read those reviews and think like, okay, what did they get out of it that I didn't, or what did they see, or what angle are they writing about? You know.
Well, and that's I almost don't want to read those reviews because there's a part of me that has a hunch that it's kind of like that scene in Trainspotting when Sick Boy and Renton are shooting people with the air rifle at the park, talking about the Untouchables and mm-hmm. Sean Connery and how Connery won the Oscar, and Sick Boy says it was a sympathy vote. I kind of get that same feeling here. Like, people love George Romero. Mm-hmm. They, you know, he's a legendary director for a reason. So they're not going to crap all over, you know, this unearthed, you know, rare gem. So again, I'm not in these folks' heads, but I looked at that rating. I'm like, there is no objectivity here.
Right. Right. It's, if this wasn't directed by Romero and it was the same movie, it would probably get, you know, a lower rating.
Back in the vault.
Yeah, back in the vault.
It wouldn't have been restored.
I'll take the poster, leave the movie.
That is a great tagline. That might end up on the thumbnail for
this. We went to the amusement park and went home with a souvenir, rolled up souvenir.
And that rolled up souvenir was our expectations. Anyway, David Fowley of Keeping It Real, do you have any closing thoughts on the amusement park? I think we've covered it all.
You know, my grandparents started taking me to the amusement park when I was little. So, you know, you can still have fun with the elderly at an amusement park despite this movie. You know, if you wind up losing your grandmother or grandfather at an amusement park, you know, do what you can to talk to somebody else, talk to an adult. I don't know if there's any kids watching this anyway, but
they shouldn't be. It's restricted for children.
I just remember my my grandfather could fall asleep anywhere, and so I just remember the middle of Fantasyland in Disney World in Florida. He is sleeping. It was a great shot, you know. He's sleeping on a bench. Right behind him is the Dumbo ride. You just see Dumbos going, and he's just like, it's a classic. So, you know, it's a little pricey now to get into Disney World, but it's a great place to take a nap.
It's like people who pay to go to the movies and talk on their phones.
Triggered.
Yeah, pretty much. But yeah. I don't have any senior citizen.
No anecdotes. Stories.
No. Most of mine involve going to visit my grandmother in the rest home.
You know, I have to say that this movie did conjure up those memories of, like, I do appreciate the fact that, you know, my grandparents would take me to go visit other people, maybe their age or a little bit older, and visit them in a nursing home. And it really, as a young person, older people were initially kind of scary, especially sick older people who, you know, could be dementia or whatever. And it really kind of broke down the whole stigma of, you know, the scary old people. It reminded me that, like, these are people who need, you know, attention and care and love. So, you know, if you see a website down below, dial this number. No, I'm just kidding. But you know, that's what it made me think of, is like, okay, yeah, well, I grew up already thinking this, that, you know, we should not just, you know, the cliche respect your elders, but you know what? Give them your time too.
Yeah. Just not necessarily if that time involves watching this movie. First of all, I think it would traumatize them. And second of all, it's a waste of time. Anyway, thank you again. We will talk about something else coming up. I think actually
something mischievous.
Yes, tonight, in fact, if this goes up when I think it will, you can join us back here on Kicking the Seat YouTube channel. We're going to be talking about Loki.
Mm-hmm. Loki After Dark.
That's not what it's called. Oh, anyway.
USA Up All Night.
No, that's copyrighted. Otherwise, you know that would be the title. No.
Exactly.
All right, man. Thanks a lot. And yeah, we'll talk soon.
All right. See ya.
Bye.